Now, we heard from the Barnum kids, I think. They were the ones spotting the cedar waxwings.
Yes.
And that, I've not seen that bird a lot in my life, but I love it. And I think a couple weeks ago, you told me that, you know, everything is changing in this time of pandemic. Even Christmas bird counts are changing.
That are coming up soon, right? We've had to make some adjustments. Our Christmas bird count will forego our gathering together in the morning and assigning sectors. We're trying to do that over the airwaves and using modern communication skills to get people into the right places at the right times to observe the birds that might be around for our Christmas bird count. There are going to be Christmas bird counts all over the area, and we will be talking about them coming up. Probably next week, we'll get together a list of Christmas bird counts and see if we can't get you in touch with the people who are organizing them so that you might find out how best to gather for your annual immersion into the avian world.
Yeah. Well, and next year, Christmas bird counts will be back to normal. I have to remind myself, lately, it's hard to believe we're going to get through the pandemic, you know, but next year at this time, things will probably be normal. If we kind of follow the guidelines, there's going to be a vaccine on the way. Sometimes it's hard to find the light at the end of the tunnel, but don't forget, we are here for you. It's KAXE, KBXE Community Radio 24/7, and we bring you the voices, the people, the information about Northern Minnesota. Stay tuned. It is the Phenology Report coming up next.
It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And we're in the 1st of December. And December is, it's going to be our darkest month. We're going to see less and less of the sun. And, of course, when we get to the 20th or 21st, we'll pass the solstice. And then we'll start increasing day length, but only a couple of seconds a day until we get out to about, well, it'll be close to the 1st of January before we really start to notice the days getting longer. But all of that lays in front of us right now. It's a chance to look at some of the events that we've observed this past week. And one of those events, reported to me by Sue Hutchins, was that she had a chipmunk out and about on the 23rd, 24th, and 25th of November. And that's pretty late. I have some other observations of chipmunks coming out in January, actually. I think Harry Hutchins reported 1 year of a chipmunk out in January. But outside of that, not a lot of chipmunk sightings. I haven't seen a chipmunk in my yard since October. So maybe I just haven't been here at the right moment, but I've put out a lot of what I would call desirable food for chipmunks, and they have ignored it. So I think my chipmunks are sleeping. We have also had sightings. Well, Sue had a northern flicker in her yard this past week as well. So that's an unusual sighting and possibly the last of the flickers to move out of the area. I don't know that we've ever had a flicker in our Christmas bird count. We get a lot of robins, and I saw about three or four robins still hanging around my place yesterday, gathering some of the apples off of my crab apple tree, but those apples are getting down there. There can't be more than two or three dozen left out of thousands. And so I expect that when they deplete that resource, they'll move along. I was out walking yesterday and I had a really nice day. I went out to Crooked Lake, which is the lake that I live on, and checked the ice thickness early in the day. Solid 6 inches of ice over most of the lake. There is a stream that flows into the lake and a stream that flows out of the lake. And at both of those places, there's enough water movement to keep the ice very, very thin. So if you're going out on a lake, and we had 8 degrees last night for a low, there probably is ice on some of the lakes near you. Now, if the ice just formed last night, I would not go out. And given the weather that we're predicting for the next few days, I would wait at least 4 or 5 days before I went down and checked ice that had just formed. But if your lake's been frozen over like mine since about the middle of November, you probably have a great plenty of ice for skating. You need 2 inches of ice to support a human being of my size, and I weigh just shy of 200 pounds. You need 2 inches of ice to hold that body up. You need 4 inches of ice if you really want to be safe and not feel threatened of cracking and whatnot. But there's plenty of ice on some of the smaller lakes that have been frozen for a while. So start near shore, start in shallow water, stay away from areas where water moves. Points are dangerous. Any place where water flows in or flows out of a lake is a dangerous spot. Just be aware of where you are. Know your lake before you go out. And of course, take somebody with you. Take your picks, take a rope. It's easy stuff to carry. Bring it down there with you. You know, better wet and safe than sorry. While I was walking yesterday, I went down and explored some of the swamp and some of the forest. I walked over to the eagle's nest by my house. The funny thing about the eagle's nest was that the ground around one of the trees, not the tree that the eagle's nest is in, but a big Norway pine that grows nearby and has plenty of big open branches. I was walking along and I noticed the ground was just freckled with excretions from the eagle. And I got to thinking this must be a place where he likes to sit and eat, because there was certainly plenty of evidence of the byproduct of eating there on the ground. Also, walking in that area, lots of running club moss, spiky, shiny club moss, different club mosses shining green below the snow or in the snow or in areas where the snow had melted away. The crested wood fern is still green along the edges where you get into the, as you move from, say, tag alders or speckled alders and you're moving into sedges more, look and see if there aren't some ferns tucked in there. And chances are those are the crested wood fern. Another thing I noticed, and I was well out in the sedges, and I could see this red in the background up against that transition zone where the swamp or the wetlands goes from woody stem plants to sedges. Right at the edge, there were a lot of young willows that were 2 to 3 feet high and bright red. They just were shiny, shiny red. It was really quite exquisite to go check them out. I talked to my friend and a name that many of you are familiar with, Scott Hall, and he and Frida had been down along the Mississippi River for a hike, and Scott said there was a big flock of Canada geese and a number of trumpeter swans. And of course, the trumpeter swans, this time of year, they just congregate wherever there's open water. So there will be swans, if you have open water, like if you're on the Mississippi River or the Gull River or any of those areas where there is open water, chances are you're going to have swans there throughout the winter. They just hang around. They don't feel any reason to move. As long as they can access water and get food, they're perfectly happy to stay right here in northern Minnesota. The other thing that Scott saw and told me about was muskrats. And he talked about muskrats being up on the ice along the Mississippi River. And it made me think about a piece that I wrote a while back about muskrats. And I'm just going to read a couple of paragraphs from that one. The winter life of a muskrat is no picnic. During the fall, they construct their familiar houses by piling up vegetation gathered from the surrounding waters. These domes have an underwater entrance and a small platform allowing the muskrat to sit and rest above the water level. Until the air temperature freezes the shell, they are vulnerable, and any predator that decides to dig in can do so. Once the outer shell is frozen, gas exchange becomes limited and the concentration of carbon dioxide can climb. Muskrats often congregate to share warmth, and that consumes more of the available oxygen. Because the muskrats are active throughout the winter, they need to eat every day, and they find their food on the bottom of the pond or lake and must dive into cold water to get it. Unlike beavers, they store no food in the winter. Swimming is hard work, and muskrats have evolved to compensate for the lack of oxygen in their winter environment. They are able to increase the amount of red blood cells within their bodies. This allows more oxygen to circulate in the blood. They also have a protein called myoglobin that allows oxygen to be stored within the muscles themselves. These reserves allow the muskrats to stay underwater for several minutes if necessary. Staying underwater has its own dangers because the water is just above the freezing point and it quickly saps the warmth out of the rats. The very thing that makes rats desirable to trappers, their fur, keeps them warm and dry. They have a dense layer of fine, fuzzy hairs against their body that trap air and keep them dry and warm. Over that lays a smooth coat of long guard hairs that shed water. This leaves them with only their bare feet and that long, bare tail to worry about keeping warm. Rather than attempting that, muskrats have evolved a system of regulating blood flow away from those exposed areas. Essentially, they allow their extremities to cool to temperatures near the surroundings. Pardon me. Scientists have observed muskrats before and after dives and have discovered that they shiver to warm themselves before they dive, and upon returning, they shiver again to return their bodies to the preferred temperature. None of this explains why they are seen out wandering in January, but most of us would agree with the shivering. We've all done that on a January day. So the muskrats, and interestingly, one of the things that scientists have discovered about muskrats in the interim is that they, by putting cameras into beaver lodges, they found out that oftentimes muskrats will come into a beaver lodge and the beavers don't seem to mind. They just accept them as one more warm body. And I guess, you know, if you're huddling, you're not too critical of your neighbor as long as he's warm. So interesting thing about muskrats. And that piece that I wrote about the muskrats had to do with muskrats kind of showing up in midwinter, which is not a typical time for them to be out moving about. And that oftentimes is caused by getting frozen out of the pond that they've selected to live in. And so they're forced out onto the roads to find a new place. Among the other things I've been observing and observed yesterday while I was walking and have observed while I'm driving around, and if you're driving this morning, check out some of the brush along the edges of the roads. It's not all the same color. Some of it is quite remarkably different in its coloration. And three that come to mind are, one, red elderberry, which has a light gray bark and a really interesting habit of growing in arches. So these branches come out and they arch up, and gradually the weight of the branch and the fruit at the end of the branch force the branch over into a big arc. And then other branches will grow off of that sort of vertically. And this architecture is, once you've looked at enough brush, this architecture really jumps out at you. So look, light gray, and these arching stems with vertical stems coming off of them. And that is going to be red elderberry. And if you have any doubt at all, go up and break off a branch and you'll see that the center, the pith of that branch is quite red in color, and that will tell you for sure that you're looking at red elderberry. Another light gray plant out there that I've been observing and is really easy to spot is mountain maple. And mountain maple has this very light gray stem, almost khaki colored. And if you follow that stem up, when you get to the new growth at the top of the plant, it goes from this khaki or gray, this light gray, to red. And so if you're looking at these bushes that have a clump, and they're going to be a clump, they're going to be several stems, and they're going to come up kind of light gray, and then the ending branches are all going to be red. That will be mountain maple. And if you're really, really, really looking closely and you're walking through the woods, there's a plant out there called black alder or winterberry, northern holly, and it has very, very, very dark bark. But the very ends of the branches have this sort of silvery, waxy coating on them, which makes them look really interesting. So that's sort of the master's degree work. If you get out there, the elderberry and the mountain maple are pretty easy, but if you get where you can start picking off the black alder or the winterberry, you're doing a good job. You're getting there. Lots of common ravens around right now. The pair by my house are engaged in these flights of, I don't know, bonding or play, but they're definitely flying together and having a pretty good time. This past week, my dog managed to trap and kill a red-backed vole. And this is a mouse-like animal with a very short tail. And the rump, from about mid-back all the way to the rump, is bright, well, not bright red, but chestnut red, like a horse's red. Just astonishing. I know that we have the meadow vole here. I didn't realize we had the red-backed vole, but now I know it's here. Saw some mink tracks, saw some ruffed grouse tracks, lots of things in the snow, lots of stories to be told. It's a good time to be outside. Get out there and practice your plant identification here in the wintertime. We talked about shrubs today. We'll talk about some of the dried flowers that are holding over from last summer in future shows. So stay tuned, and by all means, get outside. That's the Phenology Show for this week. Stay tuned.